rises. I wake up and chase my dreams. I won't regret when the sun sets, 'cause I live my life like I'm a beast.
Welcome to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil, the Iceman Mendoza. Phil, how you doing tonight?
Good, Will. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm pretty stoked about this podcast. Tonight, as a guest, we have what I know a lot of guys would consider one of the most badass backcountry bow hunters going around today. He's an expert on packs. He knows boots, shoes, whatever it is. If it's hunting related, this guy knows it. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Aaron Snyder.
What's up? What's going on?
So, hey, what's up, Aaron? I heard you're out doing a little turkey hunting this weekend.
We did a lot more bow hiking than turkey hunting. We got about 2.5 miles in, and we were knee to balls deep in snow. And I was, well, we'll go ahead and go for the fitness aspect of it and go fishing. It ended up being a great trip. We caught a bunch of fish, but turkeys aren't up that high yet. So we chalked it up to, for training.
You went fishing with your bows.
Yeah, it's bow hiking.
I've done that once or twice. I've also done some bow sitting in trees.
Yep. Yeah. But no, it's a good trip.
So, Aaron, I know one of the things a lot of people listening to this podcast are going to be curious about, so I'm going to get right into it, and that is packs. You are the lead pack designer at Kafaru, is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. I am now.
Oh, perfect. Kill the other guy.
No, yeah, the other guy's like my dad. That's Patrick. He's 72 now, so he stepped back. 6-8 months ago, right when I got back from the territories, and now basically it's just me and another guy that do most of the designing, Eric Bender and myself, and we get help from, Phil helps design. That Mountain Warrior training camp we do, that's a lot of musical packs going on during for the testing and everything, so it's been good.
Is that what that is? I was going to ask you about that, too. I don't want to get too off track. But the Mountain Warrior, I don't know if anyone's seen this on social media. I know a bunch of guys I know go to this. And it's basically you guys get together and then just go out there and go for it. Load it up and go.
Yeah, at a pace that's really not even fun. Like, my wife is really a positive person. She's like, so, did you have fun? And I'm like, well, 4-mile-an-hour pace with 70 pounds is not, there's nothing really fun about it, but it's good exercise. And yeah, Phil goes to most of them. I mean, obviously everybody tries to get in when they can. So it's a good time to test packs because you get several different body types, different heights of guys, things like that. So,
and the terrain and everything, we mix it up. And I can tell you from experience, there's a few times I've been up there with these guys, and We get to the top and we pretty much look around and, yeah, that was stupid. That was stupid. I mean, the pace that Aaron and some of the other guys, I mean, it's real training for some extreme hunting. So it's not for the candy ass. I mean, for sure.
We've had some fallen soldiers. We've had some one time show no go the next time. Because we'll do the stairs at Red Rocks, the bleachers. We'll do Green Mountain and do a 6-8 mile loop. We'll do the road sometimes, like a road march you do in the Army, and then we'll do the Tower Trail, which is just a hellish, 2 mile climb, 2,000 feet in elevation type of a deal. So yep, a little bit of everything.
The term I hear whenever I talk to some of these guys is competitive. It's competitive. Now is it meant to be competitive, or does it just end up that way?
Well, anytime you get a bunch of alpha male guys, you might as well just pull out the weebies and see who's biggest in the beginning, because no matter what anybody says, Very few people like to finish last, second, or anything else. So we generally almost always finish as a group, which is cool. I mean, there's somebody always, you know, in the front, but there's certain things like Phil may be good at, right? Like, I'm a climber. I like to climb. So Gabe and I, who does Train to Hunt, Gabe is a crazy climber too. Luke's good as well. And then Phil, you seem to do good. Like, he's just Mr. Consistency all the time.
I'm a tweener.
Killing those downhills.
Well, then
I'm
you
a
get
tweener.
Paul, another one of my buddies, Montana Paul, he's funny because he'll be lagging, dragging ass way back going uphill, and he's short. And then we'll get on flat ground, and those little legs, I mean, Fred Flintstone might have snuck into the wood patch because those legs are moving, and he'll just blow by you faster than the pace I can even walk. So everybody's got their, you know, strong points when we do it.
So it's kind of like it sounds a little bit like you know about bike racing at all. They ride in the Peloton.
Yep.
Everybody picks their moments when to go.
Yep. Yep. A lot like that. That's for sure.
Man. So when it comes to these packs, Kafaru makes what I think most people, at least all the people I know, would consider them the best pack out there in the industry. And what do you think it is about Kafaru that really separates them from everybody else?
There's a few things. One, it was Kafaru was started by a pioneer really in the backpacking industry, which is Patrick Smith, and comfort. Like, that's always been his strongest thing is basically comfort. And, you know, being very functional, and then obviously being able to, like, versatile, being able to exchange pockets, packs. Like, some companies, they'll have 3 or 4 frames in 3 or 4 years, and you can't swap bags on frames, things like that, where one of our frames now, you can put a bag from 12 years ago on it, and it'll fit. So, you know, but it's also family-owned. I mean, Patrick and Sarah, they've got 3 daughters. 2 of those daughters work at the company. The third daughter's husband's the IT guy. You go in there, pretty much everyone's related. Some of the assembly guys and things like that aren't. We're American made 100%. And that's not to say we order a bunch of Chinese shit and then put it together in America. It's just American thread, buttons, buckles, everything is made in America. So all of those different things, you know, makes it, you know, kind of a family. Like, we want... As you guys know, you can call me anytime. I don't always answer, but I try with technical questions, things like that. And we're also the guys out there using it. Like, some of the things I'm working on now, I've been working on 2 years that'll be out, you know, sometime. And most companies don't test their products for 2 years, 3 years, things like that, where we test the piss out of them.
Can you give us a hint?
No, I can't. I'm going to give you the standard response. There's something always in the hopper.
Oh, man. I'm trying to make this podcast blow up. Give me something.
Tell us real quick, Aaron. When you started with the company, it started as a consumer, right? I mean, you started on the other end of the counter.
Yeah, I was reviewing gear, and I kept hearing about Kafaru, and they were, you know, kind of hard to, I mean, they're right up the road from me. They're kind of hard to get a hold of. Patrick, he just spends too much time in the woods. So that's one of the reasons I made myself so accessible, because he's great to talk to, but he was in the woods a lot, things like that. So anyway, got a couple packs. They gave me a discount on them to test them out. They were seconds. And I've told this story a million times. I was with Derek and Jay on a scouting trip in the Maroon Bells. It was like a 5 to 7 day trip. And we just did basically 2 days of hell trying to find these deer. And every step I'm like, man, where in the hell have these guys been? I can't, you know, like, I'm not, this is heaven for me. Like, this is perfect. Well, one thing led to another. 4 years later, I run the company with the 2 daughters. You know, so I went from consumer, just normal guy, and then just throwing in, sending out an email like, hey, I was thinking, can you guys change this? Or, hey, I like this. Patrick and I, we became more a father and son. Like, I was hanging out with them all the time and giving them ideas and things like that. And then they put me on as like a sales rep, still working. I was working full time in construction, and it's escalated now into where I'm at, which is chief designer and sort of GM, not GM, I guess you could say. There's the two daughters and I run the company, so it's been an adventure.
That's awesome. Now, Patrick's, how many days out in the woods does he spend out there?
A lot. I mean, a couple hundred days, 150. I mean, even now, it's 70-something. We don't see each other anymore as much now. I don't need as much guidance from him, you know. I basically just fill him in. And so he's 4 days a week pretty consistently. He's out in the field. And there's some stuff I just don't have time for, because with Patrick, he was an unbelievable, like, innovator designer. But he didn't really, you know, he doesn't like running a business. So, and he, you know, marketing and stuff, he didn't like doing that. So now I do a lot of the marketing and things like that. So it takes up more time, and I'll be like, hey, can you help me out with this? And he'll, you know, run it for a while, bring it back, give me his thoughts. So it's a big help for me, even though he's partially retired, I guess you could say. He does help out a lot.
So. I asked that because that's one of the things you're kind of known for. Before I even knew Aaron Snyder works at Kafaru, I was hearing, Aaron Snyder, yeah, man, he spends like 100, 200 days out in the woods, like just sleeping out under the stars. I was like, man, that's a lot of days in the woods.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people believed it, or some of the things I was doing or anything like that until more recently. Because
what is your number?
Last year I was over 200 days, and Jody, my wife, kept track of that. But I was also in the Northwest Territories for almost 2.5 months. I was in Washington with that governor's goat tag for a couple weeks straight, and then I hunted here for quite a while. Plus, that doesn't include testing. I mean, pretty much I'm gone. Like this week, we're heading out Thursday or Friday. We're coming back Monday. Then I go on a 10-day backpacking trip in Washington after that for kind of a get-together. It's actually in Idaho, right on the border. So this year, with the new role in the company, probably 150 days pretty easily.
Damn, man.
You got to figure out I'm in the those field. Days. Well, Phil drew a sheep tag, so I'm going to be on the side of that mountain with Phil a lot in August. So I'll be gone August, September, October, and most of November.
Damn. I mean, and those aren't days, like, if people say, like, days skiing, it's days you got there and skied. It's not necessarily days they spent, you know, hiking out in the backcountry skiing. But well, when you say it, that's days you're sleeping out under the stars, not coming back to the truck.
It'd be better to say it as nights, because that's – everybody says days. Like, a lot of posers say – oh, I was in the field, whatever. Well, that cat driving around in the woods doesn't count. Nights in the field in the wilderness with a pack on my back, yeah.
So. Gotcha. So I'll stick to saying days driving around in my truck, and you go with nights.
Whatever. I mean, rub some funk on whatever you can. Yeah, but I'm out there a bunch, that's for sure.
Damn. So what I guess to get back to the packs – a lot of guys, you know, one of the cool things I saw was you guys have the name escapes me right now, but it's like a meat, a specialty
cargo panel.
Yes. How did you know?
Yeah.
Heard it described like that before so well.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it was when I was at the Portland Expo and guys were calling it the Road Hunter because there's a lot of clear cuts. And guys like, oh, man, this will be great. And I'm like, oh, are you going to use it for backpack hunting? He's like, oh, hell no, I'm going to keep it in the back of the truck. And then if I shoot one, I can just run down in the clear cut and strap the quarters to it and come out. But it's great for shed hunting, training. I mean, most of us run it for training. You know, and then a lot of guys, like, once they kind of – because it is a little convoluted. There's some straps on there. You got to figure out how you want to set it up personally. But the idea is you can – you know, 5 days or less, you can go in with like a dry sack or a camp bag, backpack in, drop that stuff, and then have basically a super tight flat panel that you can strap anything into at any time. And a lot of guys from back east are using it for tree stands because it's an amazing tree stand and ground blind hauler.
Yeah, I saw Gabe had one down in Arizona, and I saw that thing, and I fell in love. It was love at first sight. I was like, Gabe, what is that? Where did you get that? And he's like, oh, Aaron, I got it from Aaron. I'm like, oh, that looks like the best sandbag carrying thing I ever saw in my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we've had a bunch of we sold a lot of them. I mean, a great. We haven't heard one bad response on the cargo panel. You always get some negative stuff. Nothing negative on the cargo panel.
Yeah, I think I'm going to run that for all my hunts this year, and or most of them anyway. But, you know, as far as I don't have the time in the woods with running the shop, because our peak time, our busiest time is, you know, July and August, and, you know, sometimes the first part of September. So a lot of my September hunting is 2 or 3 day trips. So I think, like Aaron said, it's perfect to, if you're going to go in for a few days, take some gear, drop camp, and then you've got a lightweight day pack that, you know, some accessory pockets on there. You got your essentials and you're hunting, man. And if you get something down, throw a quarter or some meat on the panel, I think that's going to be money for a lot of hunters.
Well, are you going to run that for train to hunt too, or?
Maybe.
I got to get it. Secrets tonight. I have it. I have his cargo panel at my house. I've had it for a month now, and I still haven't got it over to him. So he's probably waiting on me to get it to him.
Yeah,
I'm not hurting for
secret Aaron Snyder special I keep hearing about.
I'm not hurting for. I've got I think 3 different bags, the Kefaru bag. I tell you what, man, I was switching back and forth. I had my 1-year-old son. I stuck a sandbag on the bottom of my T2, and then I sat him on the sandbag, and we went for a hike a couple of weeks ago. I put a picture of that on Facebook. I mean, the versatility on those packs. I mean, my wife was looking at me like I was insane at first. She says, "What are you going to do to our 1-year-old child?" I said, "He's going to go for a hike with me." And I tell you what, man, put a little pillow in there for him to sit on, and strapped him in, and kid couldn't have been happier. So there's a few Kefaru bags in my house that work well for train to hunt and working out with the Mountain Warrior, whatever packs, whatever we're running. So I'm not hurting for the cargo pan. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not hurting for a bag.
What I think something Phil and I talked about earlier, like talking about like 2-3 day hunts, 5 day hunts. I think a lot of guys get in their mind, you know, keep in mind I answer a ton of technical questions for Kefaru, that maybe they read a Cameron Haynes book, and it's really easy to be hardcore on the couch, and it's really hard to actually accomplish a 10 to 12 day hunt, consecutively a backpack hunt. And this is coming from a guy that's kind of done a couple 14 day solo trips. You're talking to squirrels on day 7. Your ass crack is raw on day 10. You smell so bad, your underwear walking. You're basically, it's a mental, for me, the couple times I did 14 days, by day 7 or 8, those last days were more of a mental, I'm not going to break and I'm going to make it in the woods. You know, I'm going to make it that long, if that makes any sense. And not to drift off or whatever, but I think a lot of guys, I try to talk them off the ledge on some stuff because they're ready to go full bore. And I'm like, well, you might want to look at this other pack, because you know what I mean? You're driving a semi truck through the drive-through getting that one. So we have enough options where anybody can get kitted out with exactly what they need. We offer multiple different bags and packs. So.
Yeah. And Aaron, expand a little bit more on that, because you and I, we talk often. I mean, Aaron's, you know, Kefaru is 20 minutes from my shop, and, you know, Aaron and I, we work out with the Mountain Warrior stuff sometimes, and then we'll get together and shoot sometimes too. But so we get to chat about a lot of different stuff. But one of the things that comes up a lot, and I get it from the archery side of stuff, from the technical archery side, and Aaron gets it from the backpack, you know, and the survival stuff. There's guys that they start shooting a bow and they get hooked and they want to get going on this, you know, they want a backpack hunt. That's what they want to do. And we're going for 7 to 10 days, but they've not even done a 2-day trip or a 3-day trip. So Aaron, I guess you've spent a lot of time in the woods. You've spent a lot of time with longer day trips. How would you recommend, or what would you recommend to somebody just starting out? I mean, how would you say, you don't go from point A to point B, you know, I mean, 100 miles an hour, right?
No, and considering the song that started this podcast, I'm going to go ahead and it's kind of like sex. The first time you do it, you're probably going to suck at it. So you have to do it a lot to get really good at it. Backpack hunting is no different. You need to start off slow, figure out, okay, am I good with a night? Am I good with two nights? Some guys don't like staying out in the woods. Floorless shelters. Some guys think it's going to be great, and then a bug crawls on them. It's not great anymore. So even from testing gear, testing the amount of nights, the amount of food you consume, you know, a lot of guys bring way too much food. Some guys don't bring enough. That's all stuff you can't predict. You don't know how far you can push yourself or what you're capable of without a little testing the waters. I mean, a lot of guys, they really, as politely I can say it, I mean, they really overbite what they can do. Every year, guys will call me because I talk to them about everything. And they're like, I'm going to do 12 days. I'm going into this wilderness. We're hiking in this, you know, here. And I'll be like, look, I basically do for this for a living, fellas. And I can tell you, you're not going to make it up that hill. I don't want to be a negative Nancy. But maybe you should set a little more attainable goals. 10 miles in on your first trip, maybe a little too much. Why don't you think of 2 or 3? I get a lot of I played college football. I've been training really hard. And you guys from back east, if you're coming to Colorado, no matter what you do, you're at a disadvantage because of altitude. And you can wear the training mask. You can do whatever you want. But I just backpacking in last week, we were at 10,000 feet. And, you know, we train like, you know, animals down here. You get winded until you get climatized, until you get used to that altitude. So you guys are at least a 24 to 48 hour disadvantage before you even get used to it. A lot of guys will get headaches. So you really need to set achievable physical goals, but also, you know, don't just dive into it without testing the waters, whether it's on flat ground back east or whatever else. You really need to know what you're actually capable of. And then you'll get to a point. I mean, of course, I have a sat phone now where no mountain is too high, no whatever is too far. I'll end up on the highway somewhere and call somebody to pick me up. I could give a shit nor wagon where my truck is. And Phil's going to experience this on a sheep hunt, I'm sure. I'll sleep wherever I need to, go wherever I need to. Not like Billy Badass, but like I don't worry about getting lost. I don't worry about running out of food because in Colorado, the wildernesses aren't that big. I can walk across most of them in a day. I'll get to a road and I'll make it. Most people, it's going to take a while to get them to that point.
Yeah, and Will, I'll tell you, like Aaron said, we'll run a 6-8 mile loop. That loop's not taking us 3 or 4 hours to get done. I mean, we're moving, and it's all in preparation for this stuff. And I Aaron talks about the sheep hunt. I tell you what, man, something that came to mind also. So I knew about a week ago that I had an idea. I should say I drew this tag based off checking the Colorado Division Wild website and checking the backdoor method. So I had a pretty good idea, but once I actually had the tag, the confirmation online, it was kind of like, okay, now it's real, right? But I started thinking about it. It's like, man, I got 2.5 months before this tag starts. And how many guys out there that aren't training that draw a tag like this can get ready in 2.5 months? They can't, you know? And like Aaron says, he's not trying to be Billy Badass Aaron's hunted all over Colorado and Idaho and, you know, the Northwest Territories last year. So those hikes and those hunts that a lot of people think are no big deal, if you're not doing it regularly, they're a very big deal. So just ease into things, prepare as best you can. But like Aaron said, don't bite off more than you can chew, because I see it on the archery side all the time. And guys get their first bow and they want to, what sight do I need to get to shoot 100 yards? It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Learn to shoot at 20 before you want to shoot at 100. But anyway, I mean, it's the nature of the society now. Everybody wants stuff now. So ease into it.
I mean, I think that you can, 5 days is achievable. 2.5 to 3 miles in is very achievable. That's not an unrealistic goal, but getting your packing list dialed in so you're not carrying too much or not enough. You know, there's a happy medium in there where, you know, there's some things you may want to add a little weight more for comfort. Other things you could probably skimp a little bit on. But, you know, I try to tell everybody now, you know, set, try to do 5 days. Make sure your pack weighs less than 45 pounds, roughly. If you don't know what you're doing, if you do know what you're doing, like in my case, I'm carrying 30 pounds of camera gear. 45 pounds, 5 days, and set. Now, when I say, I'm not saying come from New York to hunt only for 5 days, but what I am saying is hunt for 5 days, test the water, see how you're doing, bounce back out, go get a motel room, take a shower, reassess the situation. If you're feeling good, head back in for 5 more days. That it's amazing what a little shower, a little TV, a cheeseburger, and a milkshake, whatever it, you know, twist your, trips your trigger, will do for the mental aspect of it. And you're like a brand new Madden heading in, because most of the guys, and I know, you know, a lot of guys, they will feel guilty on the drive home that they should turn around and head back in. Like all they could do is think about coming off the mountain. They just weren't enjoying themselves. The moment they start driving back, they're ready to get back in there. So just kind of take a big step back, get into town after that 5 days, grab some food, whatever you got to do. And it's amazing. I can do 5 day trips. I could do 8 months straight, like, you know, come back for a day and head back in. It just definitely rejuvenates you.
I think that's one thing anybody should think of who's planning, say, a longer hunt that is, you know, the longer hunts are achievable. Just think about chunking them up into sections.
Yeah, I definitely suggest it. Now, you know, of course, as I'm saying that, we're doing, I think, a 9 day hunt. After I get done, you know, Phil and I go down there. And I don't know what Phil and I even talked about. I mean, 5 days in the area we're going is like 15 in most other areas. It's, I've gained and lost 8,000 feet in a day in the unit where we're going. Scouting, just, you know, looking. But, I mean, to me, if you were going to, if you had all the time off in the world and you had 15 days off to hunt, I think 3 5-day trips is even better than 2 7-dayers, as weird as that sounds. It just keeps you motivated.
And that's really kind of the battle, too, when things start going wrong, is to keep that motivation up, keep your spirits high.
Yeah, and I mean, some guys just inherently are, like, I very rarely, maybe 2 times ever, have gotten on a bad mood on a hunt. Like, I'm optimistic to a point it pisses people off, and I don't sleep. So, you know, snowstorms coming in, and shit's hitting the fan. I'm like, wow, I'm sure glad I brought my hat, and my buddies are giving me the finger, right? It's, I'm so happy to be out there. It's good for me, but you have to keep, especially if you blow a stalk or blow out some animals, you know, that right there is kind of like the final friendly line of, all right, has that broken you? Has that mentally gotten to you? Or can you keep going? And I mean, a good example of that, a guy, Adam Tangsrud, he's a guy that's here in the Denver area. He and I and a buddy of mine, James, went on a deer hunt. And Adam and I don't talk as much anymore. But that opening day, he had a rifle tag that's in bow season. It's a high buck hunt. He watched a 34-inch deer that we had scouted the entire season get shot 5 minutes. A guy snuck past us on a backpack hunt. He was kind of a weasel. And he cranked this deer. I was watching in the spotting scope, literally talking to Adam, saying, all right, dude, grab your shit. We're going to kill this thing. Boom! And there, we called him Flary because he flared way out. Well, Flary's front right leg or left leg was flipping in circles. And I was like, mother son of a. Well, Adam, we're going to have to hunt now, because it was a, you know, that was a deer we picked out. And you could see he was panicking. Now, he ended up shooting 180-some-inch buck, but he was like, man, I need to salvage this tag. And he wasn't really thinking. He had 9 days to hunt. You know, we had 8 more days. And it's just that for him, he had just set his sights on that deer, and he recovered and he got an animal. But a lot of guys, that'll break them. That'll be difficult for them. Things like that, or gear going down. Like, I've had some guys, you know, that it was almost like when their tent blew apart, instead of hiking out, buying a new tent and coming back in, they could financially afford that. It was almost like that was a really good excuse they could tell their buddies when they got home, like, I only made it 4 days, my tent blew apart, rather than saying, you know, hey, I went down in town, sucked it up, and went back in. That was their excuse for calling in 4 days into a 10-day hunt. So I don't know what I'm rambling on about, other than just stay as mentally strong as you can, because, I mean, you're definitely going to hit some breaking points on a backpack hunt there. You're going to have to suck it up.
So, you know, going into the hunting conversation with, like you said, you've been in the field more than most. So there's got to be some other stories that, you know, what was the, maybe the most gruesome, I don't want to talk, you know, bad, but what's the most gruesome accident or something, you know, bad shit that's just happened when you've been around or when you've been on a hunt that you can remember, you know, with being in the backcountry?
I'd say two categories. Like, one would be the most gruesome physically, right? The one that just kicked my ass. And that was James, my buddy James's goat hunt, which is also the funnest hunt I was on. But it was, you know, one of those ones you drop 20 pounds on, even though you're prepped and hiked all over Hell's Creation. He did end up shooting a state record goat physically. And I'll go into that one more later. The most gruesome thing I've ever seen, I was in the Maroon Bells, and nothing happened to us as hunters at that point. But I watched a climber right above me. I was on a scouting for goats, come off a cliff and snap several bones in his leg, just flatten him like a pancake. And I mean, you could hear him screaming from down below. And now I was watching because it was cool watching him climb. You know, and it was one of those deals. We went over, we ended up, I mean, good example of backpacks. They all had fast packer packs. And
the two people who don't know are.
Super, like a fast packer pack would be one that's not really load bearing. It's just for, it's the, like a 2.5 to 3 pound, 3,500 cubic inch pack. Basically like for weight weenies, you know, they're going in, they're not packing out an elk. They're just packing in some ropes, climbing gear, and a bivy sack. So ultralight backpack. We ended up having to strap the guy to our pack and get him down to safety. And I'm pretty desensitized from the military, but I mean, his leg looked like a couple Tootsie Rolls or like a silly spaghetti. I mean, they were just crushed. I never talked to the guy again. That was probably the most gruesome thing I've actually seen. I mean, last year I got bit by a spider in the territories, not as gruesome, but my leg swelled up almost twice the size it normally is. That was probably the closest, you know, where I thought, wow, is this going to be something I'm poisoned and going to die? And I pissed out a kidney stone once 6 miles in. That's the most. Well, I didn't piss it out when I was back there, but.
I've had kidney stones and they are not fun.
Well, it was kind of one of those things for me. I had to kind of assess the situation and be like, do I pack enough gear when I try to make it out to stay the night if needed? Or do I go fast and light and just, you know, mentally tough it out to try to get to the Jeep or the trailhead. And I chose that route and I made it. And yeah, I mean, dude, that's painful. I couldn't describe the amount of pain. I thought I was going to pass out from shock. It hurt so bad, you know? And then I looked like that dude on the Green Mile trying to take a piss on the side of the trail. It was bad.
For those people who haven't ever had the pleasure of a kidney stone, imagine a small ball made out of razor wire is making its way from your kidney to the wherever you take a piss out of. It's that much fun and enjoyment for the person who has one.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, I don't know any way to describe it, but yeah, you're pissing out a BB that's covered in razors. And then, you know, when you pee it out, you can hear it bounce around in the toilet. It immediately feels better. Like, I went back in the day after I, you know, pissed it out. And it's not like a Billy Badass type of a deal. But it was one of those things where you immediately feel better. I was hydrated and I was like, well, the chance of me having another one are so slim, and headed back in. So,
ugh. And even thinking about that right now makes my fucking...
Yeah, let's change the subject back to the goat hunt.
Yeah, the goat hunt. So James, and I tell you what, James is a very good example of, you don't have to be a buff, you know, insane, whatever you want to call it, selfie posting gym rat. And I mean, when James and I went on that goat hunt, it wasn't like I was slouching, like I was in my prime. And that season, James shot that goat. We went on a 12-day backpack hunt here. We killed 2 elk and 2 mule deer. We packed out a moose for a guy. I went to Washington. He shot his moose. We packed that out, shot 2 bears, and he shot the goat, all in about a 30-day time frame. And James, when he got here, we went straight to 13,000 feet and just – he was on the deer hunt with Adam, that hunt I was just talking about. But when we got on the goat hunt, it was one of those things. We would park. We would literally, you know, no trail or anything. head to where these goats we had seen were, or he had seen, for 3 to 4 or 5 days at a time, whatever it took. 7 miles in, backpack out, whatever it was, hit the truck, drive to town, grab more food, head back to another area for, you know, I can't remember, it was 12 or 14 days. And on one of those days, we'd hiked all the way around the mountain, ended up coming down a gorge. I can't describe how much of a physical drain. Well, I vomited, like I didn't have anything in my stomach. And, you know, it got to the point where we were trying to find this road to where, I don't know if you saw the photos, the guy that shot the governor's tag goat last year, Ben, it was me, Ben, John, Pence, James. Anyway, Ben, like, I'll be indebted to Ben the rest of my life. We called him on my sat phone, said we cannot physically make it back to the truck. We're going to end up over on this road. Can you come find us? Well, Ben is a slightly confused because we're like hell and gone from Cartagena. We're 27 miles from our truck. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Are you sure? And I'm like, dude, we're going to end up on that road. I don't know where. Can you just drive up and down it until you find us? We were 3 hours later than we thought we'd be. And here comes Ben in this giant jacked up Chevy with Subways, Gatorade, and Copenhagen, my favorite. And I'm like, holy shit. And so I mean, like last year, that's the number one reason I helped him with his hunt was he stuck it out and just kept driving up and down the road till he found us. Now, for me, that was like what a hunt was supposed to be. Now, I thought we had everything in that hunt. We had a record goat. We had near miss deaths, you know, sliding down glaciers. Like I slipped up on a glacier. I didn't have my crampons. Took off. I'm like, man, I'm going to die. I can hear James screaming. And then, of course, he's laughing at me once I didn't die. We had everything you'd want in a hunt. And Ben thought we were completely just totally stupid for doing all of that. He's like, I would never do that. But, you know, everybody likes their own thing. So for me, that was one of my top hunts. Now, you know, luckily we did shoot the state record. But I also physically, my knees hurt for a month after that hunt. James was the same way. It took physically a toll on my body. Like it, I look like an avocado on a toothpick. I lost too much weight, got a big fat head. I just didn't look right. So it took a while to get back, but it was an awesome hunt.
Oh man. So on a hunt like that, what kind of physical preparation were you doing before that?
You know what? I don't ever change my physical prep. All I do is, I mean, I go to the gym almost every day in the morning. I've changed my routine. Like I used to be really, really big as far as, I used to be really fat too, lost a ton of weight. And then I got really, really muscular and I've done everything I can to lose as much muscle as I possibly can. I do a lot of supersets in the gym, just normal stuff, a lot of push-ups, sit-ups, abs, the normal stuff. And then all I do for like cardio training is I put anywhere from a 45 to an 80 pound backpack on and I hike hills, I do stairs, everything we do in that mountain warrior training camp, because that's what you're going to be doing on the side of a mountain. And so that's how I train. You know, I change that up, but I mean, a strong core and strong legs, I mean, legs feed the wolves. I mean, that is the key, is a strong core, legs and cardio. So that's all I do.
Now, what time are you getting to the gym? Because you're one of the few people I see on Facebook as early as I am.
Well, and we're 2 hours ahead, but exactly. I don't sleep too much. I get to the gym between 3 and 4:30 in the morning, and then I try to get to Kafaru, you know, 5:30. Well, any time between 5 and 6. And honestly, I wouldn't get shit done if I went to if I got to Kafaru at 9, I would get nothing done. All my work's done early, so.
So basically at 9 o'clock on, you're just hanging out.
Well, no, the phone won't stop ringing.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Oh no, it's nothing like that. It's just, it's so busy. We're growing so fast and technical questions, designs, things like that. I mean, you know, especially now, with the growth that we have, as much as I'd like to be in the woods every day, there's no way I could at this point. We just have too much stuff going on. And I look at, like, you know, like Nate and Lisa. Nate is our IT guy. That's the husband to one of the daughters. And then Allie and Lisa, they're like my family. I just can't let them down, so I've got to be there. But I would honestly be better off at home answering those questions and doing that stuff because I really can't get anything done at the shop. But
call the satellite phone. I'll be in the woods if you need me.
Oh, and I've called customer service calls on the satellite phone, and that'll definitely throw a guy through a ringer if you call him on a sat phone to answer a backpack question. He's like,
that's dedication. Calling? Customer for life right there.
Yeah, yeah. But that's – I mean, I don't have anything. I get kind of pissed watching all the haters on Facebook about guys working out. I mean, okay, if it's not your thing, I mean, I don't care. I don't want to hear that you did sit-ups today or you squatted too much, but I just don't – I don't have to look at it either. But if it's helped somebody physically to see Phil and I climbing up a mountain, if some other asshole wants to call us whatever they call us for posting our workout that day – that's fine, but if we motivated 30 people and then there's one guy making fun of us, I don't really give a shit. I mean, I don't go too overboard on what we do. I like to show people just enough of what we're doing so they get the idea and get them motivated. And, I mean, let's face it, most of America's fat. We could do to probably spread, you know, fitness around a little bit. It's just my fitness is different maybe than most. I really stick to just the backpack stuff.
Well, so so you're pro the fitness movement in hunting then, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely pro fitness. I just don't get quite as wrapped up about...
Not so many selfies.
Yeah, there's a lot of selfies. I mean, don't get me wrong. There for a while, I saw Cameron Haynes' nipples more than I saw my wife's. I'm like, dude, put a shirt on. But he does motivate guys. You know, I don't have anything against Cameron. But, I mean, to me, like... you can always change the channel. Like, you don't in life, we all have choices, and I don't like watching chick flicks, so I don't turn the fucking TV on when they're on. So if you don't like what someone's posting, don't let it hurt you internally. You probably have your own mental issues. If it does, just don't look at it. It's not that big of a deal. And like I said, that I am definitely pro the fitness movement, and there's always shit that gets talked, even about the train to hunt guys. You know, you got everybody talks about everybody, but I mean, you know, in the end of the day, would the guys talking shit rather the train to hunt guys weigh 350 pounds, popping off things out of the side of the window wearing flannel? It's not like you guys are doing bad things. You're doing good things for the community. So I think it's good.
Are you going to participate in train to hunt at all this year?
No, I'm not.
Ah, come on. Why not?
Because I'm actually going to be in the woods training to hunt. I scout a lot for a lot of different guys. And my competing days are, I mean, not to be a wiener, but it's not my thing anymore.
Hey, that's understandable. But,
I mean, I'm not going to lie either. If I won, everybody would say, of course you won. And then if you lose, everyone talks shit about it. So it's like I did a backpack challenge thing down in the sheep show, and they waited to have it till 2 a.m, which is about the time I get up, and then I was sick, not making excuses, but long story short, we did it, and I couple three guys beat me, whoever it was. I still hear about to this day that I didn't finish, that this guy beat me, and it's like, one, it was 2 a.m, I can't remember, but if it was that big of a deal and we want to have a challenge, can we bet a shitload of money to make it worth it, for one? And then two, let's not just, you know, a bunch of half-drunk guys doing it inside of a building. Let's have a real actual challenge. And I know, like...
Wait, what kind of challenge was this with drunken men in a building?
Oh, it was awesome. It was, everybody was all jacked up. It was a 100-pound pack, and you had to run up and down stairs. And, like, I think Dustin Rowe packed Cole Kramer for it instead of the backpack. I think they'd been drinking a little. Those two guys are good guys, too. They're funny. But Kafaru's been talking about we may organize something a little bit different than Train to Hunt or integrate it with Train to Hunt, but doing... basically, we're going to call it a Kafaru mile, where it's a lot more realistic to hunting and reminds me more of the, you know, 6 miles in with 40 pounds or 50 pounds each on a four-man team, 6 miles back out with 100, where it's not at all like Train to Hunt. We don't want to take anything from that, but we've been talking about doing something like that where it's just basically a mental gut check, just a grinder, type of a road march backpack type of a race.
It ends up just being a death march.
That's what I like to call them. Yeah, death march.
I actually think that's a great idea. I think a four-man team scenario where you just beat your balls into the dirt is a pretty good time. So,
and it's a big pee-pee contest, right? Like, pretty everybody much can have their badass four-man team and talk shit the rest of the year, which I always like. So I think it would be good. It doesn't take anything away from Train to Hunt. And let's face it, if you're successful hunting, the one thing you have, a backpack hunter, you've got a death march in the works. One way or another, you got to get that animal out, and it becomes a death march. So
that's very true. I'll be interested to see how Train to Hunt evolves from where it is as well, because once you include the East, you're really including a different type of hunter where, you know, I mean, yes, there are guys who backcountry hunt, but there's far fewer on the East Coast. There's a lot more, you know, strength and setup and planning and timing involved, you know, than say go out and hike to where you're going. A lot of guys are just driving to where they're going.
Yeah. You know, and why you bring that up, because I don't want to be on this thing for 3 hours tonight. I got a bunch of shit to do. But one thing I think is important for guys from back East or anywhere for that matter is the one thing I feel I get some advice from is hunting on a budget. I mean, don't get me wrong, you're not going to trophy hunt very well on a budget, but if you want to take animals every year consistently, one, it's very attainable to do in multiple different states on a very, very low budget. If you don't go, you know, full retard on gear and everything else, I don't think people realize how cheap you can actually do some of these Western hunts and be successful at them. Physical fitness plays a very large part in that. Also common sense and knowing how to hunt. But, I mean, have you been out west yet?
Not to hunt. I have for backcountry skiing trips and for Train to Hunt, but not yet for actual hunting. Until Train to Hunt, I didn't even know anybody I could go out there with. But now I've been invited to just about every state out there.
Let's take away all that shit about being invited. Now, I've went back east and hunted whitetails, which I feel is harder because you assholes own all the land and you have to have permission in a lot of spots. And
Eric,
the Midwest.
We have the largest state park in the nation in New York State. That's plenty of public land.
Well, that's in New York. I was stationed in Fort Drum, so I've been into Adirondacks a bunch. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yeah, it's hard as shit to hunt it.
Oh, it's horrible. But out west, you guys have every option in the world. What stopped you from hunting an over-the-counter tag in a wilderness area?
Me, it's just been my lack of knowledge. And honestly, that's one of my goals next year is to come out and do a hunt.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about. Like with the knowledge, I mean, it's a four-legged animal. You got a weapon and the ability to shoot it. What were you worried about? The tag drawing, where to go?
Yeah, I didn't know. Let's put it this way. I started hunting 3 years ago, started bow hunting 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I basically taught myself how to gut an animal, how to do, you know, pretty much everything I've done hunting wise. And so it's just kind of been all building up to me going out west, just be kind of, you know, garnering a little more skills. So if things do go wrong or if there is something I need to know, I know it.
No, I got you. I guess, and that's kind of, well, like, look at it this way. I've never slept with two chicks at the same time, but when that point comes, I'll figure it out. That's the same way with hunting. You just got to do it.
Well,
and I'm not
the difference. I ever sleep with two chicks at the same time. I've had a shitload of practice with one.
Well, there you go. I mean, if you if you're gonna head out west, I mean, honestly, my buddy, my old, because I, you know, being poor or whatever, my buddy Johnny, on a very shoestring budget and a very cheap Honda Accord, we would drive everywhere to places we had no idea if there was animals. We would just look at a map, but we were young, we were dumb, you know, no brains, no headaches. Now, we may only come home with 5-point elk, but it filled up that Honda Accord. I mean, we figured it out, and I think a lot of guys, once they get past that fear, it's amazing what you can overcome on a low budget. And, you know, this is getting away from, you know, assholes that talk about, you know, trophy hunting and what's a trophy, and I wouldn't even skull, you know, I'd skull cap any animal you'd ever shot. Just getting out there and shooting something, I would much rather hear about a guy like you coming out west, and, you know, doing an 8-day hunt and being successful than I would some guy on a private landowner tag, because you had to actually work pretty dang hard to attain what you did and to achieve that. And I think once guys get past that fear, they'd be a bit more successful. And this is also me talking to a lot of guys on the phone, so keep that in mind, the guys with questions and everything else. If you just do it, it's amazing what you can, you know, you can achieve.
I think that's 100% true of trial by fire.
Yeah, it's kind of a pass-fail thing, which I always like better. You know, if, like, I don't know what to get. Oh, I mean, hunting Washington, for example, I went into an area, this is 10 years ago, on the Quinault Mountain Range. No idea if there was elk there. It rained. It was just it was a miserable trip as far as that goes. But we got an elk. The one thing we didn't let stop us was the rain. Nobody else was still out there, stayed out where we backpacked in, all that type of stuff. Was it the smartest thing to do? No. Did it probably take a year or two off my body? Probably. But we killed an elk and made for a hell of a story. And I've got a friend for life, the guy I was with. We just didn't let anything. We didn't take no for an answer. We just kept going until we finally got one.
Well, that's how you get shit done.
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly.
Maybe, you know, next year, my first hunt out west, maybe we can put together a little guide you can send out to customers. How to hunt the west if you're coming from the east. Real step by step.
Yeah, exactly.
Take all the fear out of it for you.
I mean, if you can definitely shit can fear and, you know, get at a good physical fitness level, you know, be cognizant of the gear you buy, that you spend money where you need to and skimp where you need to. I mean, it doesn't have to be as expensive as people make it.
You know, I think that's a very good point, is where you put your priorities and where you put, you know, allocate your, you know, what money you do have. You can get a lot done with a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Aaron, so touched real quick too on that, because I don't know if I've heard you on other, you know, just in conversation when we've talked in the past, but choosing the right gear and when to spend the right gear for the time and place you're hunting, because like you said, Washington, rain, you know, other states you may not encounter as much of that, right? Or as cold of temperature. So, you know, like you said before, use a little common sense, but I mean, maybe elaborate on that a little bit more too, as do a little research before you go out there and then just go do it.
Well, and I, you know, I wrote a couple articles on this, but I, you know, assessing your situation is a big one. So if you, now keep in mind, I've got all the gear in the world, so I get to pick what I want. But if you're coming to Colorado where it doesn't rain that much, you know, you want to focus maybe a little more on lightweight because of the terrain than anything. I mean, really, you can find, and this is coming from a guy that is a gear junkie and has all the best gear, but you can buy First Light Merino on Camo Fire. You can find on Sierra Trading Post boots on sale. You can buy backpacks used. I mean, let's face it, if you get a decent pack, you got a good set of boots, after that, if you're harder than woodpecker lips, you're going to make shit happen. You just have to be tough. I mean, a good set of boots, you got to walk there. A pretty comfortable pack will help you get there. And I'm not saying that just because I work for Kefaru. I can eat whatever food I want right now, and I eat ramen and tuna for most of my meals, and that's like a $2 meal. So taking into consideration like your food, you know, budgeting ahead of time and then looking for sales. If you don't have, you can't be type A and be a backpack hunter and be poor. You're going to have to let one of those go away. So the type A portion, if you can be on a budget, not always matching clothing, not buy the best and brand new stuff, you can get out to Colorado for, I would say, $2,000 tax, title, and license for gear and everything and the tag if you're really careful with it. And like Phil said, pick your battles as far as what, where you're going and what you're buying for gear, things like that.
Man, that brings me, so I guess we're kind of getting short on time, so I'm going to go ahead and, if you don't mind, get into some of the questions people sent us in to ask you.
Yeah, lay it on me.
All right. Now, I think you may have already answered this from Phil, but Brock wrote in again. Thank you, Brock. What is the hairiest situation you've been in while on a hunt / in the backcountry, four-legged animals, not two?
The hairiest situation?
Yeah.
We had a grizzly come into like 15 yards, charge us. That'd be the hairiest one.
Is that a dead grizzly now, or what happened?
It was just a hairy situation. I mean, it was the kind of thing where, you know, popped up out of the alders and everything you would think it would be, you know, couldn't put a greased BB through your asshole with a hammer type of thing. Like, whoa. And that way it's not dead. It worked out where it was doing bluff charges. It was a younger grizzly, so it wasn't. Those are the bad ones. The younger ones are not smart enough to know to go away. That was probably the hairiest as far as with a four-legged animal. I would say mountain goat and sheep hunts coming off of cliffs were, you know, physically like the most hairy, where I thought I was going to fall and die. But that grizzly coming in was definitely by far the where I was one time where I about shit my pants.
All right. Another question we got, and this is actually a question I have because I have no fucking clue. That is, how do you know how to fit your pack properly? And I know this is a question a lot of trained to hunt guys want to know because of the sandbag carry. Everybody pretty much wants to feel comfortable moving that weight if they've been training.
Say that one more time. What now?
How do you know how to fit your pack properly?
Oh.
And I guess for me, I know. I've listened to another podcast you were on, and I know, you know, the shape plays into it and the style of it. And I have no idea, actually, how to put a bag on other than, you know, shoulder straps go over your shoulders, you do up the waist belt, you cinch all the things down as tight as you can, and you go.
Well, keep in mind on different packs allow different options for adjustment. Some packs, it's just never going to fit somebody correctly. I think that a lot of people, it's hard for them to understand exactly how that works. But if you're 6'4" and you're running an Eberle stock, unless you have 40-inch long legs, it's never going to give you a functional suspension, a functional load lifting suspension. So a lot of it is going to have to do with the pack that you have. But I'll pick a generic pack out that.
Let's say, if you don't mind, I'll use myself for an example, right? I've got the duplex frame made by you guys, and I really have no idea what I'm supposed to cinch up when or how I'm supposed to distribute this shit.
Okay, now keep in mind we make a lot of videos that I lose sleep over to make, so assholes like you can't watch them. But if you watch the video, it would answer the questions. There,
so you're going to send me a link to this video, and I'll post it with this podcast.
It's amazing if you get on the duplex page and you click the video button. I know that's difficult.
I'm there right now. Where's this video button located?
It'll when you click on it, see on the bottom right there, it says videos. Oh, sweet Jesus. There it is. So
yeah, I see it. Got it.
So those videos will explain how to adjust, obviously, a Kafaru pack, but it's the same.
Provided as soon as possible.
Uh-oh.
You will be guided for the removal of the adware spyware virus on your computer. Seeing these pop-ups means that you have a virus installed on your computer.
Well, too much porn, Will. Too much porn.
Risk. Well, that's embarrassing. And get
your computer fixed. Hey, man, that's real life. You can't cut that shit out.
Yeah, I think you need to leave that.
You got to leave that shit in there, Will. So go ahead, Aaron. Continue,
so,
please.
I'm yeah, going to so, leave it in there. This is one take.
It's a one-and-done deal.
Exactly.
Okay, so if you take a backpack and a guy is 6'2" and 240 pounds, and he has a 33-inch inseam, I'm guessing his torso is around 20 inches long. So that's from your C7 vertebrae down to your hips. At 240, he's also built, so he has a very large chest. So those shoulder straps, compared to a guy the exact same height, exact same torso length, the guy that has a bigger chest, the shoulder straps are going to have to be lengthened more so the end of the shoulder strap isn't rubbing up at his armpit. So those shoulder straps have to be lengthened. And then obviously the belt needs to be centered in your hip bones. If you have the shoulder straps lengthened the correct amount and the hip belt in the center of the hip bones, and you look back and the top of your frame is below your shoulders, that will pack will never fit you what we at Kefaru would consider correctly for load-bearing pack, meaning it has functional load lifters. A lot of people don't understand load lifters. A load lifter doesn't lift shit like your pack up. It lifts your shoulder straps up off of your shoulders, and then it transfers the weight to your hip bones because your hip bones can handle a lot more pain and a lot more weight than your shoulders do. Your shoulders can. So as far as correct fitting, the most generic way to explain it is you should be able to put 70% of weight on your hip bones, obviously 30% weight on your shoulders, and adjust from there without any major pressure points like what would be a pack. I won't mention any specific pack companies that I've tried, but where you have something just jamming the piss out of you in the side, rubbing you raw or whatever, just you, it should be a comfortable feeling pack with 40. And then it's going to be, if it is with 40, 50, 60 pounds, then it's going to be as comfortable as it can be with 100. If your frame is below your shoulders, just suck it up and be tough and grind that shit out because it's never going to fit you as comfortably as another pack may be able to.
Yeah, and I can attest to that real quick. I had a Badlands, the large frame, which was too, when I loaded that down with an elk quarter and started hiking with it, the waist belt started riding way below my hips, and it was not fit properly. So like, I guess it's probably because of torso length or however it was adjusted. It was probably set for somebody 6'2", 6'3". I'm 5'10", you know, and as soon as I put that weight on there, it just, there was no, that was a grit it out and hike that shit off as best you can because it's not getting any better. It, you know, like I said, so you don't need to throw anybody under the bus with pack companies, but I've been that guy in the past with the improperly fit pack. And, you know, like you said, it's you're gritting your teeth and you're just trying to get the shit off the mountain because that shit ain't fun.
Well, and I've been there. Well, as Phil knows, a lot of guys, people think I'm just inherently wealthy. I've been just a regular standard average construction worker, Joe, where I couldn't afford anything, going through a divorce, the whole nine yards. Yeah, and if you're going to be poor, you're going to have to be tough in backpack hunting because you just can't afford really comfortable gear. Phil, though, in one time, I think, what was your brother? We were on a Mountain Warrior training camp, and he's like, man, it's not fitting right. It was a Kefaru pack, and I think your brother adjusted it for him, didn't he?
Yep.
And his brother's, he's a healthy boy. I mean, he's
250.
Yeah. I mean, he's a little short for his weight, but the pack didn't fit Phil correctly. And so, and a lot of guys, I hear this a ton, and I mentioned this on the other podcast. You know, a guy, if a guy 6'2 owns a Kefaru and it was built and sent out to him, fitted for him, and his buddy that's 5'7 throws it on, and then I hear that guy later on talking about, I've tried a Kefaru, it wasn't that comfortable. Well, I mean, if I put on my wife's underwear, they're probably not going to fit. That's just life. Well, yeah, if you're trying to, I mean, that shit just doesn't happen. So the pack's got to be fitted for you correctly.
So as a rule of thumb, you know, these guys who are listening out there, where should they have their hip belt located?
Well, it depends on which pack company or whoever you ask. But for our packs, the center of the hip belt should be on the center of the hip bone.
All right, and that the other podcast you were on, I believe, is the Gritty Bowman is the name. Correct? Is that what they?
That's correct, the Gritty Bowman.
And it's a good podcast, and everybody else who's looking for a good hunting podcast, I would recommend you check it out.
Yeah, he's a funny dude. I actually got to do two of them with him tomorrow, so by the time I'm done, I'll be tired of podcasts.
So, Aaron, real quick, I mean, just to kind of wrap stuff up, like I said, you work at Cafaro. You're available by phone there. I mean, anybody, if you want to get on YouTube, Aaron used to do some outdoor life videos that there's a lot of great information on there as far as like just stuff to put in your pack, things to experience with gear or to look for gear. What if people want to look for stuff or get a hold of you or check stuff out? I mean, tell everybody in addition to Cafaro, what other things you got, irons you got in the fire, what other places you write for or whatever.
Well, I write for Eastman's off and on, and send them a ton of different photos they use, which doesn't have anything to do with this. And then obviously Rock Slide. I'm on Rock Slide a lot. I write articles for Rock Slide. Then, yeah, there's Vimeo and YouTube. There's videos everywhere. I have a section on Rock Slide called Aaron's Corner. It's just got a bunch of different videos and articles. And then, for the most part, I'll try and answer the phone or email. My email is Aaron, A-R-O-N, at Cafaro, K-I-F-A-R-U.net. And those are the places you like, you know, deboning elk, loading packs, things like that. Those videos can be found on Vimeo or YouTube.
Sweet.
All right. Anything else you got, Phil?
No, man. I mean, we'll have to definitely get Aaron on again. Like he said, we're going to be going on a sheep hunt together this year that I drew a tag for. So I want to be able to recap after the fact, you know, after the hunting season. We'll try to sit down with Aaron again and just relive the adventures that are ahead of us and some of the other, you know, experiences that Aaron's got or hunts that he's got going on this year. So, you know, if we'll just try to put that on the calendar for down the line and get that going again.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right, Aaron, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been a great time. Next week, we have Andrew Munsell. Is that how you pronounce it, Phil?
Yeah, Andrew Munsell with Hamsky Archery Solutions. Andrew's one of three founding members of Hamsky, and we'll get technical a little bit next week with in relation to gear, and Andrew was on some pretty neat hunts in the past also, so we'll dabble a little bit in that part of his world too. So
and for those of you who don't know, Hamsky makes what most people would consider the greatest archery rest you can put on a bow, or arrows you can put on a bow. Correct.
Very versatile rest, very durable rest. Aaron runs a Hamsky VersaRest also, right, Aaron?
Yep. I got him on all my bows.
There you go. What more do you need than that?
Wait, so, I got it. Will, you're going to have to get the porn virus off of your computer before you get Andrew on here.
Before we leave, Aaron, you alluded to something earlier about it's like sex. The first time kind of sucks. Is that the first time with another person, or is that the first time you figured it out for yourself?
It's always good. I didn't say it sucks. I just said you suck at it. Now, punching your clown, you're a master at that from the beginning. I mean, you can't be bad at that because it's with yourself, so you're good.
But okay, relation to another person.
So, Aaron, I mean, if it's going to be like the first time I had sex, I can expect to drive all the way out to Colorado and go out there for 3 minutes and I'll be all done?
Yeah, I guarantee it wasn't 3 minutes. You're lying. There's no way. You might not make it to Colorado in some cases. It could happen. You might have to turn around early.
You're about to stay in New York.
On that note, man. All right, Aaron, man. Good talking to you. We'll talk again later.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
This has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Thank you all for joining us. Catch my breath, and I know the weight of the world can't crush my chest. Look out!